You need to understand why this issue was so important, why it was that Jesus responded so firmly in response to what looks like an innocent, reasonable question, why such a firm response against that, why the rebuke.
Following Christ means accepting what He has assigned to us without complaints and without comparison to others. As a true disciple, we can easily say, Lord, because I am following You, I am content. I need nothing else. Hi, I'm Bill Wright. Today on the Truth Pulpit, Pastor Don Green focuses on John chapter 21, beginning with verse 20, as he continues the teaching series, Follow Me. So let's join our teacher now with insights from God's Word on the Truth Pulpit.
Now, as we turn to our passage today to finish the Gospel of John, I was commenting to my family, it's not my usual pattern to pick up at the end of a book. I'm finishing the Gospel of John before I even begin it. I don't know how that happened. But as we turn to our passage for today, Peter's life for this last time in this series is again going to be instructive for us and for you. It's going to expose a serious temptation that each one of us, to one degree or another, faces that could draw you away from following Christ. This is a temptation common to man, common even to Christians, to fall into the trap that Peter started to stumble into in the passage that we're going to see. This temptation is a threat to your sanctification. It is a threat to you following Christ faithfully. It is a threat to your contentment. And so we want to expose this temptation and see how to respond to it, again, as we look at the life of Peter and see a mirror reflecting our own hearts back to us. So John chapter 21, verse 20 through 23 is where we're going to spend most of our time today. Look at verse 20 with me as I read the text today. Jesus had just said to Peter, follow me. In verse 20, Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. The one who also had leaned back on his bosom at the supper and said, Lord, who is the one who betrays you? So Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, Lord, and what about this man? Jesus said to him, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. Therefore, this saying went out among the brethren that that disciple would not die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, but only, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? This passage is going to clarify your thinking about the Christian life. If you respond to this passage, it's going to purify your motives in living the Christian life. If you respond to this passage, you're going to find your heart greater satisfied in Christ with what Jesus teaches Peter in such simple language. I'm going to structure the message today around two primary points. And the first point is this, is that to follow Christ, you have to, point number one, maintain the right focus. You have to maintain the right focus. What we're going to see as we look at this passage is that Peter's focus quickly got off of following Christ into things that were none of his business. And so Jesus brings his focus back to the primary concern, the only concern for a Christian. And in that, Jesus set him straight and will set us straight by his grace and his loving care as the great shepherd over our souls. So you have to maintain the right focus, and we'll unpack what that means as we look at the passage. After verse 19, after Jesus had said, you're going to die, now follow me, after that discussion and after that event, it appears that Jesus and Peter started to walk away together along the beach, walking away from the other disciples who had gathered together at that morning breakfast. Peter, based on the passage in verse 20, Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. as Jesus and Peter were walking it away, it seems that he sensed that someone was behind them. And so he turned and he looked back and he saw the apostle John, identified here as the disciple whom Jesus loved. That's the way that John refers to himself in this gospel which he wrote. He calls himself the disciple whom Jesus loved, and he was walking after Jesus and Peter a short way behind them as Peter and Jesus started to walk away. You would expect John to not want Jesus to leave without him. Not only did Jesus love him, he loved Jesus, and so he doesn't want Jesus to say anything or do anything that he's not a part of. And so, drawn by his own love for Christ, he follows after them as Jesus and Peter start to walk away. Now, I want you to turn to John 13 in just a moment here. But notice that in verse 20 it says, Peter saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. And then John gives a more specific description of who's being addressed here so that no one could miss it. He says, this is the one who also had leaned back on Christ's bosom at the supper and said, Lord, who is the one who betrays you? Now, I want to take you back to that passage where that occurred just briefly in John 13. Turn back to John 13 if you haven't already. I just want you to see the context that is being alluded to here in John 21. What happened earlier? Now, in John 13, verse 21, Jesus is with the disciples in the upper room. He had just said that he who receives me receives him who sent me. Now, look at verse 21. When Jesus had said this, he became troubled in spirit and testified and said, truly, truly, I say to you that one of you will betray me. The disciples began looking at one another at a loss to know of which one he was speaking. Now, verse 23, there was reclining on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. That's a reference to the apostle John who wrote this gospel. Now, verse 24, Simon Peter gestured to John and said to him, tell us who it is of whom he is speaking. Verse 25, he, leaning back thus on Jesus' bosom, said to him, Lord, who is it? And then Jesus went on and made it plain that it would be Simon Iscariot who would be the one who would betray him. A couple of things about that is, first of all, to appreciate the intimacy of the relationship that John had with Jesus, so much so that his head was on Jesus' chest around this supper. In addition to that, something that's a little easier to overlook is to pay attention to the fact that Peter was close enough to John that he said, John, find out who he's talking about. Peter and John had a connection that is reflected in what happened there at the Last Supper. Beyond that, Peter and John had a relationship, as we look at the Gospels, that in multiple times we see them together at crucial points. Not only did Peter speak to John on the night of the Last Supper, you'll recall from earlier in the Gospel, they ran to the empty tomb together. They were fishing together earlier in John 21. Here they are again together with Jesus. John and Peter, their lives had been intertwined around following Christ during his earthly ministry. And then after the resurrection, their lives were totally intertwined around following Christ in their mutual love for him. I say all of that to help you see this. When Peter says, Lord, and what about this man? I want you to see that it was entirely natural for Peter to ask that question. Peter had just heard that he was going to be martyred. Jesus had given him a direct and specific prophecy about what was going to happen to him. And whatever happened to Peter would have an overflow effect of some kind on John. And so when Peter sees John close by, it's natural, it's an expression of natural affection for Peter to turn to Jesus and say, what about him? Question in the original language is very abrupt. It says, but this one, what? What's going to happen to John? Since you're in the mood to make the future known, like you've just done with me. Let's find out what's going to happen to John. Now, at one level, it seems like that question is innocent enough. There's natural affection there. Jesus had just made a prophecy. It's a natural kind of question and seems innocent enough. But Jesus' response to Peter tells us that something important was at stake here. Look at verse 22 again. Jesus said to him, "If I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You," it's emphatic, "you follow me." The sense is, Peter, what I do with John is none of your business. You have no reason, you have no right, you have no prerogative to be prying into these issues with me. Now, personally, I don't think that we should be, that you and I should be too hard on Peter here and impute wrong motives to him like jealousy or things like that that some commentators do. Peter, in this context, had just been greatly humbled by the Lord. He had been restored by the Lord. The Lord had just commissioned him in a threefold way to take care of his sheep. And so I believe that the guilt of Peter's question is more along the lines of misguided curiosity rather than something like boastful arrogance or petty jealousy. But regardless of whatever it was that motivated Peter's question, Jesus' response indicates that Peter's heart was going in the wrong direction. He had obviously taken a step away from following Christ when Christ had just commanded him to follow me. To follow Christ, that is. Now, why is that such a major concern? Beloved, I want you to understand that the risk and the mistake and even the sin that Peter committed in asking that question is a temptation for every one of you. And you need to understand why this issue was so important. Why it was that Jesus responded so firmly in response to what looks like an innocent, reasonable question. Why such a firm response against that? Why the rebuke? Well, wrapped up in seed form in Peter's question was a failure to recognize something very fundamental that goes to the very heart of following Christ. Whatever this rebuke was about, it was preceded by, "Peter, follow me," verse 19. Peter asks this question, and Jesus in verse 22 says, "That's none of your business, you follow me." What's the principle that is at stake here is somehow something that is very fundamental to truly following Christ. We need to understand this. And to start to unpack it, here's the way I believe we need to think about it. What Jesus is expressing here, what Jesus is manifesting here, is that Jesus alone is absolutely sovereign over his disciples. He is master over them. As a master is over a slave, so Jesus is over his slaves. So Jesus is over his disciples. Think with me a little bit. Jesus is the one who created them. Jesus is the one who called them. Jesus is the one who laid down his life and shed his own blood to save their souls. He purchased them with his own blood. Jesus is the one who will ultimately judge them. Jesus is the one who has reserved the place in heaven for them. It's all about Christ and what he has done for his disciples. He is absolutely sovereign over his own. And during this earthly life, Jesus Christ is guiding their lives, his disciples' lives, according to his own purposes, for his own reasons to achieve what he himself desires. And so, what you and I have to get straight in our minds, this is so very important, is that what Jesus Christ does with his disciples, how he orchestrates his lives, how he blesses them, how he chastises them, when he calls them home to heaven. Everything that Jesus does with his disciples is his sovereign prerogative, not to be questioned by anyone on earth. Even though Christ loves us, he's chosen us, he's brought us into his family, we love him, there are limits beyond which we should not go. We should not question the way Jesus deals with his own. That belongs to him. That is a prerogative of his secret will that we are not allowed to pry into. And so, flowing from that, what Jesus is saying here is, Peter, you must be content with my calling on your life, and you leave to me what I do with other disciples. For example, John, that is not your business to pry into. Jesus had revealed his will for Peter to Peter. That did not obligate Jesus to reveal his will for John. He can reveal what he wishes. He can withhold what he wishes. That's the idea. What's at stake here is Christ's sovereign prerogative and what we do in response to it. Now to work out some application for you and I here today. You as a Christian must obey Christ in your own life without being preoccupied with what he is doing in the lives of others. Christ has the absolute unfettered prerogative, the sovereign right to work in the lives of other disciples differently than the way he works in your life. Here's what that means. And this is very practical and important. The Lord might give you prosperity. He might give you poverty. He might give you joy. He might give you sorrow. He might give you a wonderfully blessed family. You may experience the sorrows of brokenness. Jesus may give you sickness or health. He might grant you long life. He may grant what, from our perspective, is a short life and choose an early death. He may grant many external blessings to you. He may withhold those things in sovereign denial from somebody else. Or, you can flip it all around. You might be the recipient of the difficulties and the trials that seem unending, while others around you go about in prosperity and in seeming ease. What you have to have straight in your mind is that your responsibility, your focus, absolutely must be on what Jesus Christ actually gives to you in your life circumstances, and follow him in the reality of your actual circumstances rather than looking around at what he does in the lives of others and say, why doesn't he deal with me like he did with Jim? Why does Sally get this and I'm sitting here suffering? Those are sinful questions. It is wrong to reason and act that way and to think that way. Because what Jesus has given to you is more than enough to occupy your full attentions and the affections of your heart to follow him in the midst of those circumstances rather than speculating on what his purposes might be or why he did this thing and not the other thing. You do not have the right to ask those kinds of questions. Peter started to ask those questions and Jesus firmly rebuked him. What happens with other Christians does not in any way affect your duty to follow Christ. If he's given great ministry to someone else and given you what seems to be an obscure place, that's all right. You just follow Christ where he's placed you because it's the Lord's prerogative, it's his sovereign prerogative to give blessing and to bring trials and to bring chastisement as he sees fit. And because he is sovereign, because he has his own purposes for everything that he does, get this, he may do things that are diametrically opposed with one disciple as opposed to another. Turn to the book of Hebrews. I want you to see this just briefly. Diametrically different things in the lives of disciples who are equally faithful. Hebrews chapter 11. We won't park here for very long. Hebrews chapter 11, the chapter of faith, the hall of faith, as it were. The writer of Hebrews has talked about many Old Testament heroes of faith. We'll pick it up in verse 33, even in the middle of the sentence. He said, "What more shall I say about these men," verse 33, "who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire," now watch this, "escaped the edge of the sword," escaped the edge of the sword, "from weakness were made strong," and on it goes. Now look at verse 36. "Others," by contrast, "others in whom the Lord worked differently, others experienced mockings and scourging, yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were tempted." Look at that phrase that comes next. "They were put to death with the sword." Faithful disciples in verse 34 escaped the edge of the sword. In verse 37, faithful disciples yielded their neck to the edge of the sword. One is faithful and escapes. One is faithful and dies. Different results, equally faithful disciples. And it's not for the one who escaped to pass judgment or ask questions about the one who died. You simply follow Christ in the midst of the circumstances that He has actually given to you, and you let Him determine the results of your faithfulness. This is fundamental. Kent Hughes, who's one of my favorite writers, flowing from his past ministry at College Church in Wheaton, said this. Listen to this carefully. He says, "Each of our lives is a sovereign creation of God. We are not to be involved in unprofitable musings, speculations, about the relative providence of our lives, how one brother has it easier than another, or how one ministry has hardship and another is not, or why one believer becomes famous and another remains obscure. We are each simply to follow Christ." Beloved, when you accept that, when you embrace that, deep in your heart, you recognize the lordship of Christ. You recognize your responsibility to follow Him as though the horse with blinders on, so that the horse is not distracted by the things that are going around on him, but he simply sees the road ahead. We are, as it were, to have those blinders on that restrict our peripheral vision so that we're looking straight ahead and following Christ with what He's laid before us. That's the idea. If and when you accept that, it will go a very long way toward eliminating jealousy when others have prominence and prosperity that wasn't given to you. It will eliminate jealousy when you see others having opportunity that goes beyond yours, when people get promoted ahead of you and get opportunities with less experience and all of that stuff that tends to preoccupy our earthly minds during the week. If God chooses in His sovereign prerogative to give that to them, beloved, that has nothing to do with you and following Christ. That has nothing to do with you at all.
Well, that is a great reminder that no matter what comes our way, we remain faithful to Jesus because He purchased us with His own blood. Well, Don, what's another takeaway point you'd give us as followers of Christ?
Well, my Christian friend, as we close the broadcast today, let me just say this to you by way of encouragement. God intends you to follow Christ in the life that He has actually given to you.
Now, that may sound like a bit of an odd statement, but as a pastor, I've seen so many people saying, well, I'll follow Christ when such and such happens, or I'll wait and then, you know, I'll serve God and he'll be faithful to me at that point. No, that's not the way that it works. God has given you this life that you have, and he's given it to you today. And it's in the life today that you are to glorify God, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do. That's a wonderful truth, because whether you have a position of prominence in life or you live an obscure life that few men see, be faithful in the little things, and you'll find that God honors you and gives you a life that you are able to live to his glory.
Thanks, Don. And friend, don't forget to visit us at thetruthpulpit.com, where you can get free copies of our messages and much more. That's at thetruthpulpit.com. And now for Don Green, I'm Bill Wright, inviting you back next time when Don Green presents more from The Truth Pulpit.